welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running the design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California near San Diego.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, just outside of New York City in lovely Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, it's great to have us together again for another time talking about presentation design. How's everyone doing this week? Anything exciting in the works?
Things are good. I'm just finishing up a new, what will be a new regular webinar for the American Management Association. This is going to be given bi-monthly, alternating with my presentation one. This one is going to be on data visualization, and it's kind of launching a semi-new product with it. So I'll tell you more about it once it officially launches, but I'm happy about it. I'm excited about it. And so if you're looking to get some sort of online training, now you'll be able at least once a month through the AMA to get either presentation or data viz training from me.
That sounds fantastic. Wow.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it. So make sure we're on the inside scoop there. I just finished working on my fifth conference in 4 weeks and returned to my office after a full 2 weeks on the road. I'm beat. Along the way, my luggage was lost I had two business meetings that I had to attend, and so that presented a problem, and I was caught in the Delta computer meltdown, which delayed my return home ultimately.
Oh.
But I'm here. I'm Yay. In my office. I love it. I'm going to take a couple of weeks away from travel.
Nice.
We just finished a great project. I was out in Orlando and had Christy from our design team as with me. And this was a really, it was a nice meeting in and of itself, but we had an ultra wide screen. It was about 45 feet wide, 16 feet tall. It was really, really cool. And then there was a secondary 16x9 screen off to the side. What was really cool is all the general session presentations, everything was designed on that huge canvas. So we had these just fantastic presentations to work with. And then it became a breakout room later. And what they did is they used that side 16x9 screen and they pipped in a 16x9. So all the breakouts, they were more of a standard presentation. So we had a lot of fun. It was a really good meeting. So what's happening is on a personal side, I will say, and this kind of far outweighs any of our design projects that we're working on. Our daughter Kaylee is officially enlisted in the Navy as of tomorrow, we're going down to her swearing in ceremony tomorrow. Lori and I are officially become incredibly proud and nervous parents. So we will be out of the studio tomorrow to watch our daughter be sworn into the U.S. Navy. That's big news.
You should be. Tell her I'm proud of her. She doesn't know me from Jack, but tell her I'm proud of her. That's very cool.
So on news, is there any presentation world news we can talk about?
Well, I think something that's pretty cool is the MS Office Insider for iOS, that is the iPhone and the iPad, that's been added to Office. And what this means is you can choose to get updates more quickly than others who are Office 365 subscribers get them. So if you want to take a chance on perhaps downloading a product that's a little buggy, you get to be on. Yeah. No, you could.
It may destroy your digital life.
It sounds like you're going to roll the dice. Let's take a chance on this one.
You
want to
take that chance, go for it. I happen to not be doing this because my iPad is on its last leg and my phone is an Android. But, you know, I think it's a really neat thing to do. I do the super fast Insider on one of my computers for PC, for Windows, and I do the slow Insider on my other one. So I love it. If you have the opportunity to be on the Inside track, I'd say go for it. I also want to say that it has very limited enrollment on the initial rollout, but what's really cool about this is Microsoft is staying true to its air quote, office everywhere philosophy. So I think it's a really great statement on their part. If you want to learn more about it, there will be a link in our show notes.
Oh, yeah, we'll add one in the show notes. Mm-hmm.
I also want to add also, though, that the Presentation Guild, I want to remind everyone, has the benchmark salary survey out there. So if you're a company hiring a presentation professional, you may want to know what you're in for from a salary standpoint and what benefit expectations are. If you're in the gig economy and you want to know what to charge your clients, there's some information there. I will remind everyone that this is our benchmark. There's a lot of things we've learned from doing this and we want to improve on it for next year, but it's a great, great opportunity to learn more about what people make in the presentation world.
It's a great survey, and it's well produced.
Thank you.
I got a new one, and what's really funny is it's a little controversial if it's new, because I actually brought it up in one of our online forums because I was very excited about it, and then we kind of got told by Microsoft this has been around for a couple of years.
Way to but tell I think us about it.
It's kind of, well, so anyways, here's what it is. If you have a video on a slide, you can right click on it, and in the right click pop-up dialog, there is a save media as option now. Basically, what it does, it goes into the zip file, it grabs that file and it extracts it and lets you save it to a desktop. I had actually talked to a couple of add-in developers not that long ago, like saying, wouldn't this be easy to do? And they all agreed it would be. And I can verify that it is not on all installs of Office 2013. Because when I discovered it, I was working at a conference and those computers were using Office 2013. It was not there. And on my computer, I discovered it that week. I was like, look at this. And so I went to the Office 2013 computers and it was not there.
Okay.
Microsoft claims that it was a hot fix or an update that went into 2013, but not obviously all of 2013, because those computers, I did the updates on those computers myself. If you saw in my blog post or anything, what I do, Facebook, saying, you know, here I am with, you know, 20 some computers I'm updating before this conference. They were not on any of them. So somehow it's not there. But so the news for me, and I'm calling it new, is there is a great new tool, at least on the Windows Office 2016 365 side, that lets you.
I have not found it on the Mac.
Okay. It lets you right click and save media as. It just saves a few steps. And I think it's a very consumer, everybody friendly type of way of doing it, as opposed to telling people how to go into the zip file and go find it in the PowerPoint media. And
it's similar to save as picture. Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's newsworthy.
It is.
Although does it, and this is always a question that I've had, Troy, when with the save picture as, or whatever it's called, save as picture, does it just take out the image as is, or does it do any processing to it?
Takes it out at the original stage of where it was.
Okay.
So if you applied PowerPoint filters, which are actually WDP files inside the XML, it gives you just the raw original one.
But it's not going to downsample or anything like
you
that.
No, but if you've compressed it, like if you use PowerPoint's native compression to make it really tiny, that's what's in there. It actually changed the actual file because it's trying to minimize file size for you.
Right. But if you have like a small thumbnail of a large full screen image, don't worry about having to reset it to 100% size before you
Good
save
point.
It out. It'll just come out.
Well, that's a little tricky, because when you right click and you save media as, there's an option in there. You're going to get the thumbnail size unless you click the option that says in options, there's a thing that says save original media file. And that's that says basically give me the original file that's buried in this XML, folder. But anyways, the saving out of the video, it's a pretty cool, quick thing. I think it's a great addition, long needed.
I have no news. I know, Troy, you wanted me to give a eulogy for Barnum & Bailey closing down, but I tried to find a presentation link to it, and the only link I could find was, we always say that a chart, an image, whatever, won't be remembered. Certainly it won't remember the next day or anything. So the only thing that you can guarantee to be remembered for somebody's entire life is a story. And the story I have is that when I was 5 or 6, I met Richard Nixon at a performance of Barnum & Bailey.
Wow.
And he signed a circus poster of mine. So that's my story. That's my presentation connection to Barnum & Bailey.
That's awesome.
I was also in the circus, but never with Barnum & Bailey.
I was going to ask you that question, if that was one of the circuses you actually performed with. I did not.
I certainly had lots of friends in it. And I actually in college wrote auditioned for Clown College, Ringling Clown College, only in order to write an article for our school paper. But
that's awesome.
No, never performed. That.
Typography, as defined on Wikipedia, is the art and technique of arranging type to make written language legible, readable, and appealing, which could be design, when displayed. On the technical side, the definition also includes the arrangement of type involves selecting typefaces, point size, line length, line spacing, which is leading, letter spacing, which is tracking, and adjusting space within the letter pairs themselves, which is kerning. So typography principles should apply to they should apply to every presentation slide design. Mm-hmm. I think they often do not. And today we're going to gather around and kind of talk about the geeky design stuff of text on slides. Well, let's open up with, is typography important to presentation slides? Anybody?
Well, if I were being sarcastic, you know, that's not something I ever do. If you ask Microsoft, no.
Oh, there you go.
So for a program, I think, you know, like, that uses text so extensively, I have to say PowerPoint is kind of on the poor side typographically in terms of the typographic tools it gives you and features. And I don't think they've really advanced all that much in the last 10 or more years. I mean, mm-hmm. they're kind of what we've pretty much always had.
Exactly.
You know, presentation is graphic design, and one of the popular definitions of graphic design is the combination of type and image. It's all to say, for me, of course, typography being half of that equation is pretty important in presentation from a graphic design perspective.
Absolutely. It's important to me, especially since we work in a large graphic format where text formatting or poor text formatting is as obvious, as important as ever.
I totally agree. I like that. Had poor text formatting because, mm-hmm. yeah, we see lots of that. Mm-hmm. For me, this is personally a huge topic because not only is my background in more kind of that formal print design, but my incredible wife and co-founder of TLC Creative Services completed her degree in graphic design as everything transitioned from as a kind of transition to digital typesetting. So her focus on professional typesetting, it's always been top of mind, and it has greatly influenced our view as a design team on PowerPoint as a design tool, which basically means typography is an important element in presentation design.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're probably going to get into InDesign a little bit later, but that's an Adobe program that I use all the time. I used to teach it. It's actually probably my favorite program to use. InDesign has near infinite control over every aspect of type. I mean, you had mentioned kerning, leading, character spacing, space before, after. I mean, there's vertical, horizontal, character adjustment, drop caps, paragraph, character styles. You can hanging punctuation. You can, and the cool thing about it is you can just tweak the slightest little pixel to make things work. Mm-hmm. And that's what typographers do. You know, you'll have like an extra word and you want to like squeeze it into the line before, and you just, you know, you go make all the letters, you know, 0.5% squeezed in, and it's done, and it all fits beautifully and works. So it's actually, if you're a type geek, InDesign is a wonderful program to work with and use.
So I think we should clarify, though, we already had a session on fonts. I think we should clarify that fonts are only one part of typography.
Yeah, we talked about that a few months ago, episode 5, I think. But this is going to be a much broader topic of how words are laid out, fonts and styling and kind of all that stuff. So going with just with that fonts topic, what are your general rules for selecting a font for a presentation?
Well, I think an easy one in presentation for the everyday user to follow is don't use too many fonts. In general, I stick to one or two fonts in a presentation, and for what it's worth, PowerPoint does a pretty good job of setting up primary and secondary font types, you know, the spacing, the placeholders, excuse me, for title and content. I, of course...
That's through a font theme.
That's through a font theme, exactly.
Which you should try to set up.
Which you should try to set up in advance.
Always.
Pretty easy.
Or their defaults. Or their defaults. In which PowerPoint will say, hey, these two fonts work together, so you can pick one of those.
Right, you can pick one of those. I think the default is Calibri and Calibri, right?
Today
yes,
it is now, yeah. Yep. Yeah. It used to be Arial and Arial.
There you go. I do break the one to two font rule now and then when, for example, I use a special scripted handwritten typeface as a graphic element. Nolan, how about you?
So what about font size? For each design medium, we've talked about presentations being, you know, are they for print? Are they for web? Are they for presentation? Print, I think in general, 8 to 11 point type is what I might say. I get in around 10 and a half, 11. 12 point seems to be like a default font. I think it might be in Word. And in general, people have come to consider 12 point a default for print. I think it's too big. If you look at magazines and newspapers, it's not 12 mm-hmm. point. It's 11 point or 10 and a half, depending on what the font is. Presentation, I never like to say you should use 36 point or 48 for headers, because it's going to have to do with your screen size and where your audience is and the type of content and all that kind of stuff. But bigger for presentation, bigger. Why don't we put it that way? And we'll cover this later. Probably don't embed fonts. I think we already talked about
good
that.
Good rule. Just good tip.
I think fonts on Microsoft Office are just a difficult topic because it's sort of a no-win scenario. The creative designer side of me wants to use custom fonts that align with the content and the message. And oftentimes it's just to align with the corporate style guide.
Right.
Just like we want to do when we're working in InDesign, because InDesign doesn't give us any, kind of limitations, because we know that we're going to be exporting InDesign. We don't have to worry about it being available to everyone else. Then going to the other side, the practical business side of me, I always have to shackle the creative side with conversations about how the presentation will be used. How's it going to be distributed? Do we need to be concerned about things like distributing or having access to specialty, specialty meaning non-Microsoft fonts installed on the viewing computers? There's just so many factors that can affect the presentation being used that I think it's really hard to choose fonts. So selecting fonts, it's almost always I go with whatever the Microsoft fonts are, just because I know everybody will have them. And when I get to break free of that, I feel like a really, really good designer. Look what I did.
Look what you did. Well, so then thinking about it's hard to have rules, but let's go to a place where we can maybe start talking about rules. And that's a broad general rules for text or blocks of text, which sometimes we try to avoid in PowerPoint. But what are some rules you have there?
Oh, this is like all design. I don't know if you call it 101, but this is, design philosophy around text is there. Things like, there are different rules. If you have three words or if you have 30 or 300 words, you're going to approach the text layout differently. So three words is going to be an emphasis point and large bold should apply. Mm-hmm. It could be left, center, or justified. And, any of those, depending on the layout, would work. But paragraphs, you're going to have a different set of rules. If you have over 30 words, you never have all the text centered, just because it's difficult for people to quickly read ragged edges. So you're not helping your audience. Same thing applies to print and web design. If you have over 20 words, you're supposed to never go with all caps, because caps are for short statements and they kind of become shouting. That's kind of a newer take on them. Mm-hmm. But again, it's, they don't have the hanging letters, the J, the G, the Y. I'm trying to get other ones offhand. They don't have those hanging letters, and people read or use those to interpret the words and quickly read them without actually looking at every single letter. So if those are missing and you have a whole paragraph, it takes longer to read that paragraph in all caps. Mm-hmm. I also would say that right justified is reserved for short statements. It's going to create a visual line on the right side and sort of like the y-axis of a chart. That's a great example of where to use right justified text. Sometimes the titles on slides will set up as right justified, but again, those are short statements. They have a set location or numbers. If you want to do the tens, hundreds, thousands, you always want the decimal alignment, so you mm-hmm. could right align them there. But it's hard to read a ragged left edge just with the way we've kind of learned to read. Okay, that was a lot to say, but those are big rules.
No, those are good ones. I think people should be taking notes.
that centered in all caps thing is important. What kills me is a lot of memorials and monuments are all caps centered. Like there might be a whole paragraph. Like I think even the Lincoln Memorial.
I was actually just thinking about the Lincoln.
Funny. Right, and it bugs that. I mean, I don't think that has as many words, but you sometimes see these plaques or memorials and it or like chiseled in granite, and it's hard to read. when it's all centered. So yeah, I mean, I love all those. I like full justification a lot, which I get a lot of pushback from clients on. Now, it's not always appropriate, and it's mostly for print. You know, I probably wouldn't do it on screen, but when I'm doing print presentations, I like the look, the clean look of full justification. In order to make that work, you need the right content, and you need columns that are wide enough to allow for it. And that's the kind of thing, like in InDesign, you have a lot of tools to make the full justification look better than you do in PowerPoint. But yeah,
talking about working in InDesign for that, right? Is what you're thinking?
Yeah, but you can do full justification, which is, you know, aligned on the left and the right in PowerPoint. But
kern individual sentences or words is so tedious in PowerPoint versus InDesign, where you can make it work. You work from the bottom.
Okay.
But even when it looks good in PowerPoint, I get a lot of pushback from clients on it, and I think it's a lot of, you know, it's personal preference sometimes, but I like the look of it.
I just want to add, for those folks out there who use PowerPoint only, Kern is known as character spacing in PowerPoint. Right. So what the problem there is, when you're using, what did you call it? Right and left justified? I can't remember
Justified text.
Yeah.
Which means straight edges on both the left and right, Nolan? Just make sure we're saying
full. That would be full justification.
Full justification, sorry.
Full justification. I was looking for your term. That would be really hard to do in PowerPoint with the character spacing, because I think it would be really hard to control the hard and soft breaks.
Right. So that brings us to the hard and soft. So yeah. So, you know, again, you've got more control in InDesign. In PowerPoint, you can do some tricks sometimes to get paragraphs and lines to look better, whether regardless of the justification you're doing. And the big one is a soft return. So a soft return is like, and I look at this all the time, because I'm a stickler for what are known as widows and orphans. Mm-hmm. Like if at the end of a line you have like the word the, or maybe the next sentence starts with the word the or a, and it's just hanging out there on its own, you're like, that really should go to the next line. If you just hit return and you have paragraph spacing set, you could potentially end up with a new paragraph, which you don't want. But if you do shift return, you'll get what's called a soft space, which means it stays in the same paragraph, but it kicks that down to the next line. So I do that all the time to make my paragraphs look better.
Visual. Same here. I do it for the widows and everything, but I also do it when I'm working on a statement, for example, or a quote, and I want it to be very, very graphic. I use a lot of soft returns to highlight each phrase within a statement. So for example, Ben Franklin's quote, "Well done is better than well said," can be broken into three lines. Well done, soft break, is better than, soft break, well said. And the eye is able to follow that better by seeing the different parts of the statement. Well done is one, you know, you read that first, is better than, and the payoff is well said. So I use that a lot when
I told.
Yeah, so yes, that's a great example. Like you can use it visually or contextually.
Exactly.
Which is what you just explained.
Did I miss it? Did we just define how to do a soft return or a soft break?
Yes, Nolan did.
Yep. Shift enter.
Yes.
We'll do it on Mac, PC, any program. Mm-hmm.
I always look at slide content from the perspective of the audience, and legibility and quickly understanding the message is top of mind. I feel that half of my revision notes back to the design team here are where to put soft returns to help cluster phrases and thoughts and not leave lines of text with possible wrong interpretation. In addition to the widows and orphans idea of just words being hanging out there and just kind of from a design perspective not looking right, I'm more worried about, because PowerPoint is so condensed on the amount of words. So if you had something like, bad recommendations are blah, 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 you know, it talks about the bad recommendations. But if your line had a whole bunch of, you know, it had a sentence in it, the word bad was the last word on that sentence, and then the next line down was recommendations are, and then whatever those were, that's a misinterpretation.
Right.
Because people read generally the first part of a line, and they get the gist of it, and they jump to the next line down. So people could read very easily recommendations are and what they are, and they've suddenly gotten the total wrong message. Those are things that should not be recommended,
right.
But they quickly read it and assumed those are the things that should be. This happens all the time in medical content, And we're constantly breaking the content. Like, you just made that sound like it was a good thing to do this. And, you know, anyway, so it's contextual, like, is the messaging thing. One thing that would be great in PowerPoint, because you were talking about this, Nolan, is the ability to turn on styling symbols. You can do that in Word, right? I know we can do it in InDesign. Yeah. So you can see where the little character, it shows you a little overlay of this is where all the soft returns are and this is where the hard returns are. And mm-hmm. you know, it's never going to show us here's what kerning and stuff is. But just to be able to see those symbols would be huge when editing.
It would. I guess it'd be nice for some people. That stuff always, I can't stand looking
at it. I get overwhelmed.
It, be it in Word or InDesign, right? I just like bugs my eyes out, but some people like it.
I might do as a check. Like in Word, that's how I'll do it. I'll turn it on just to check. For example, did I put extra paragraph spaces in there when I really should have used the right
line? Yeah, I can see that.
Let me give an example of where, and I'm probably going to step on other topics we want to talk about later, but it's kind of a final check. So if we're doing layout of a book. So we're not talking PowerPoint. We're in InDesign. We're doing it. We've got a multi-column or maybe a magazine article. That'd be even easier because you've got multi-columns. You got some image wraps going on. I like to turn on the visual symbols and I'll just run down the left edge and make sure that indents are actually tabs and not a bunch of spaces.
Right.
So I want to see the tab marker there. I want to look at the right edges. And if I see some soft returns, I kind of take a little more attention to make sure that soft return was intentional. Because like you said, sometimes a soft return is good at one point, but then you kern the whole paragraph. And suddenly that soft return kind of leaves a bigger gap up there because it still is pushing things down. So it's a good check. I don't leave it on all the time, but it's kind of like that last, let's review this to make sure there's no errors that we've overlooked. I'd love it in PowerPoint. I don't think I'd leave it on all the time. It would drive me crazy.
Right.
So let's talk about line spacing a little bit. again, in InDesign, it's kind of mandatory. You got to think about it and set it constantly. But what do we do for PowerPoint?
Tell us what you do, because I got to hear this before I say anything.
Well, okay. I think the default settings are rarely good. Mm-hmm. I usually, the default setting is 1.0. This is line spacing. I usually reduce it to 0.95 or 0.9. Mm-hmm. And always in multiples. Always got to set it in multiples. Don't do like double or... I mean, if you do want to go double or whatever, you do it and you've got to do the pull down and set it in a multiple and type it in. Because as you change your type size up or down, the multiple will go with it. So if you set it for, what is it? Like if you set actually a hard number.
I can't remember what it is.
A point, yeah, size. Point size. Yeah. So yes. If you have like 12 point type and you set 11 point spacing, the moment you make your type, you know, 30 point, it still has 11 point,
right.
And that doesn't work. So set a multiple. And it's going to change depending on the font and the size you're using at. But I generally bring it down for like blocks of text. And if I'm doing, it's actually ironically, if I'm doing print, sometimes I'll actually go up. I will do like 1.5 or even 2 to make it, you know, be a little more designy, I guess.
Sure. No, I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. I usually default to 0.95 or 0.9 setting it in multiples. And I just want everyone to understand there's an option in PowerPoint to set it line spacing at multiple line spacing, and you go into that drop down and you add 0.95 or 0.9. I think the default is 1. Line.
And those stupid pull down defaults, or was it 1, 1.5,
oh,
2,
it's
3?
What do you ever use? Who uses those?
Well, everybody uses them because they're there. But, you know, and I think, Nolan, you said it perfect because we do multiple and people say, well, why wouldn't you do exactly? Because then it's a little bit different measurement. 1, I don't understand the measurement factor because I don't use it. But 2, it doesn't account for a different size text. Mm-hmm. It doesn't dynamically adjust. Is the way I tell people. Multiple is a better one because it does dynamically text. If we're going to do a little org chart, we're going to use the same thing. We're going to pull it down in font size. It actually adjusts the line spacing to still be 0.9 of that character font size. And it works out much better. It's just a better option, in my opinion. I believe, okay, so here's the official print rule. If you want to go back to design school, the official print rule for print is, and I'm just going to say, I'm assuming I remember this right, it's 20 to 40% of the font point size. But PowerPoint doesn't have an easy setup for understanding line spacing. And there are a few trained designers who actually think of things like picas and point size to do the equation of 140%. So multiple and 0.9, much easier just to remember those.
So wait, just a sec, Troy. You said 20 to 40% of the font point size.
120 to 140% of an actual font point size is what the line spacing is supposed to be. And that should account for things like hanging letters, legibility, so the eye can discern lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how when you're designing a font, those are, I believe, the parameters you're supposed to look at for designing your font sizing, like how far a hanging letter should go, because those are the established print design
type
standards.
Rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And don't worry, we're going to spend a whole podcast on pipes later.
I used to live. I used
just
to. Have, did you ever? Have the, did you have the little overlay, the little pica sizing things? You know, the little clear.
I cannot think in picas. I can't even deal with it.
I remember those days. And they add each.
Yeah, but I basically say I agree with both of you, because our base template that we open up, which is also kind of like our guidelines for best practices, it has the line spacing set to multiple, and we do 0.9 as our default, never the 1.0 or slash single. And then we also set the paragraph spacing to like 6 points and stuff like that.
Yep. Paragraph spacing, that's a good point. I held off addressing this in our previous segment, but there's a difference between line spacing and paragraph spacing. And with paragraph spacing, there's a space before and after a paragraph. Or
which do you use?
Well, go ahead, Nolan. Tell me what you use.
I generally use after. In some ways, it doesn't really matter. But I think in – what was there? Somebody recently gave me a reason why I should be using after, which I do.
Really?
And I can't remember.
Use both. I use both.
Do you use both, Sandy?
I do because when I'm – so let's say in a PowerPoint slide, my first line in my master is no bullet point. Then my next line is a bullet point. I set a before so that if my user wants to add another no bullet point line, there's sufficient space between the last bullet and that paragraph.
That makes sense.
I use it all the time.
Oh, I use before. I'm in the opposite end of the spectrum, Nolan. We only use before. We use 6 to 12 points before, kind of depending on the font and the line spacing and maybe that preset font size. But it's mainly to keep things easy to use. We don't use after because now there's only one parameter to look at. Is it before? And so we just leave after at 0. I don't want to utilize it. Mm-hmm. And I think I do it because I just find before an easier way to think of. I find using them both very difficult for people to understand. I mean, in InDesign, it's much, much clearer and simpler to set paragraph spacing in this context and use before and after. But for PowerPoint, we use before only. So yeah, we do the exact opposite. I think we achieve the same thing.
To one, I'll use both if I'm really trying to like micro change certain things like here and there, like in a print document, but. Yeah, I usually stick to after, and I guess I should have done my homework and figured out what the thinking was. It's just sort of ingrained.
Yeah, well, PowerPoint kind of buries it.
It does. And Troy, to your point about it being easier to use for the user, if you've taught them how to use your template, it doesn't matter. It's easy for them. They don't need to know what before and after means. My whole point is I want my next paragraph, and God forbid that we use paragraphs in PowerPoint, but I want my next paragraph to begin at a sufficient space below the last bullet point.
Well, it doesn't have to be a full paragraph. That would apply to even single line bullet lists, though. You want the bullet list to have enough spacing. So if one of the bulleted items has multiple lines, maybe it has two lines, it's a little tighter and visually, you know, it's visually compact. It's visually, what's the word I'm looking for? It's visually segmented into its own area. So you can still see there are four topics, not five lines.
Did you? I don't know if you just said this, that you do different paragraph spacing for bullets.
I do. I do.
That. Yeah, I'll do that sometimes. So you have to manually override.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing I'd love to be able to do, which you can't, is in a text box you can set insets basically. So you can say your text is inset, you know, the top, the left, the bottom, or the right. But when it comes to bullet points, sometimes I like my bullets not to go all the way to the edge. Of the text box, I want them basically right inset more. And that's not, you can't set that on a paragraph basis. It's the text box.
In the text box. Right.
So that's where sometimes occasionally I'll put in soft returns to make that, to force that.
Hey, so before we wrap up this conversation, we received a great question from Kim Hoffman. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. A presentation podcast listener that is right on topic for this episode. So we're airing Tuesday. This question came in, I think, Wednesday or Thursday. And it was so perfect. I'm going to include it here. So I'm kind of throwing this as a surprise to you. So let me read her email because it directly relates to typography. So here's the email. Great job with the podcast. I love it. 2 exclamation points. I just finished.
We're working on 3.
I just finished listening to the live from the 2016 MVP Summit, and I was wondering if there is any way to consistently add a period or not have a period at the end of each bullet point. Way back in PowerPoint 2003, and then a little question mark, It was possible, and I liked it because it made sure, especially with a large slide deck, that there was consistency. Speaking to my heart right there, consistency. Yes. Just to reassure you, I don't do presentations filled with bullet points, right on, but I do use SmartArt, et cetera, to convey points, and I would like to, and it would be great to have this feature back. If I remember correctly, it was under the review tab, I'm assuming. Well, in 2003, it wouldn't have been a tab. It was under the review toolbar.
Yeah.
Similar to spell check, but don't quote me on that. Thanks, Kim.
Huh.
So, I personally don't remember that tool. Do you?
Go ahead, Nolan.
I don't. Go ahead,
no,
Sandy.
Now that it's brought up, I don't know if it's suggestion, the power of suggestion, but it seems like I do remember something to that effect. We should bring it up with the Microsoft folks.
Well, do either of you have a methodology of checking or removing? I'm assuming we're all going for that we want to remove it instead of add it scenario. I could be wrong. But how do you go about that besides manually reviewing all slides?
I will use the find feature. Anna.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but for what? For just
period.
Period.
Yeah.
Period space as a find.
And you just hit next. And
but you got to add that space to it because that way if it's a period within
a statement.
.com, it won't pick it up. It'll skip over that one because there's no space character there.
Yeah, but there's no space at the end of a sentence if you hit return and go to the next.
I don't know.
And then it's also going to pick it up not just in bullets, but in normal.
Right.
Well, it goes through. That's actually something I'd love to do is have the find feature be applicable to slide content versus speaker notes content because I could care less about the speaker notes in this case. I wanted to find that's
now you can still have regular sentences on a slide. Now, can you put a special character in? So you do period return character?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You could do that in InDesign, of course, but I don't know what the return character thing is, but that would be a way to auto remove it all.
Does anybody have an add-in? I don't know of one that'll check for that. It's a great add-in,
Steve.
It's a good point for consistency. Is important.
Yeah, it is.
Kim,
important.
We don't have an answer. You remember more than us.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll throw. You know, what kills me is like, you know, let's say I have a whole presentation, every slide is bullet points or whatever, and they're all phrases, and you go through no period, and then you get to a bullet that has two sentences.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And you're like, I know. What do I do now?
So what do you do?
Now you can't. You can't just put the first period in.
We do.
Yep.
Really? And you just leave the second one hanging out there?
Just hanging out there.
Hanging.
I never thought about it that way, but that's it. It's just done.
Okay.
That's so good. Funny that
if you've given me permission. Yeah.
I think it's funny that we follow the same rule, Troy, and we've never spoken about it. That's hilarious.
We'll never talk about this.
Okay, it appears we could keep going on the topic of typography and just what we do in presentation design and how it applies to kind of more traditional design. So let's save the in-depth, total geeky typography discussion, hopefully for a future episode. I would say PowerPoint, Keynote, and whatever flavor of presentation software that is used, they're all design applications. And professional design is understanding how to display text. Good typography separates professional presentations from just a slide deck.
Well said.
Okay, presentation pro and tech tips. Who has what? I've got a really fun one if I can go first.
Go for it.
I'm pretty excited about this. I mean, it's hardware. You know, I found a cool geeky thing and I love, you know, all the toys. So my new computer that I've been using and I'm really loving is this MSI Gaming Series, and it has the USB-C port on it, which Macs are now utilizing heavily, and that's the only thing you can get on them. So this is if you have one of the newer Macs, this is completely something to listen to. If you're using a newer computer, I like it. It's by SMK. SMK makes the Navigator remotes, and I love these remotes. I've been using them for many, many years. And one of the reasons I like them is, one, they're all metal construction. They're designed and manufactured in the U.S. I've gotten to talk right to the reps at the company. I just find a lot of really good things about it. They work. I like their Navigator series. It's kind of their middle-sized one. They just released at CES a USB-C mini dock, and they sent me an email just kind of because I'm on their mailing list. Hey, here's something new. And I looked at it with kind of interest, like, oh, this would be really cool. So naturally, I hopped onto Amazon, and Amazon, one retailer was selling it before it was officially released. So I got mine already and I've been using it. It's tiny. It's a USB-C. It has the cable permanently connected, but on it, I really wish I had it in front of me. It has three USB three ports on it.
Okay.
It has an Ethernet port on it. It has an HDMI port on it. And I believe it has two card reader slots for the micro and the mini, whatever, not the big CF cards. All of it in one little compact all metal unit. I know it's designed in the US because they're a US based company. I believe it's manufactured in the US. It's really cool. I've been carrying it around with me. It's hard to find things that aren't plastic and it's all metal and it's reliable. I'll just go with that. I'll put a link to it. I think it's a really good product.
Very cool. My pro tip, and actually it's a presentation pro tip and a tech tip, but I'm not sure how long it's been there, but Office 365 PowerPoint subscription has the option for insert a screen recording. Have you guys used that at all?
I have not really.
What's there? Where do you find it?
It's on Insert tab, Screen Recording. So here's the situation. I needed to record a demo, create a video of a presentation that I'd created that was interactive. Of course, I didn't have Camtasia on the computer. I didn't know who to contact to get our MVP version of it. So I tried to figure out how I could do it. I can have Insert screen recording open on one compute on one instance of PowerPoint. I can have the PowerPoint that I want to record open and how can I say this?
So first of all, let me interrupt. So this is I've never used this tool.
It is
I just found
awesome.
It and I can see why you're doing two screens already, because it says insert a screen recording, but it makes PowerPoint disappear. Your active version of PowerPoint, because you're going to go record something else and put it in the presentation.
I inserted the screen recording, and then what happens is when you're done, that you have a video in the original. Okay, I'm going to back up. Start.
You're basically
all over.
Recording another instance of PowerPoint with one. You're using one PowerPoint.
Yes.
To do the recording to record another instance, because as soon as you click it, PowerPoint disappear. That makes total sense. This, I've never used it. Awesome. I use Camtasia.
Well, I know, I didn't have it, so I was desperate. But you mentioned Save Media As. I mean, awesome! Now you right click on that video that you just created using Insert.
Oh, you can export it.
You have a high res version video. It
now a couple of questions.
Yes.
Does it do audio as well,
yes,
or just
it does?
It does.
I have a link to a really poorly. The video part is I did a quick demo on this, and I've got the link in our notes, and it tells you how to record your screen using PowerPoint. PowerPoint's record screen.
And it's not just PowerPoint. It's anything on your screen.
It's actually not PowerPoint.
Right. Yeah,
that's the thing. When you click it, PowerPoint disappears. So it's like if you're going to go show a web page and how you go find something on it. But I think what Sandy's saying is she opens up one instance of PowerPoint that she can record. She opens up another instance and she clicks the record screen there.
Yep.
PowerPoint goes away, but she still has actually PowerPoint open. She goes records it there. That's that's really a brilliant hack. And two, I've never seen this tool till right now.
I remember them telling us about it maybe a year or two ago. And I don't know when it actually appeared in PowerPoint, but
it's been there for a while.
Out of desperation, I gave it a go. And it works. So
we'll put a link to that little video.
It's there.
I'm assuming it's like YouTube or
it's a YouTube video. Okay, and cool, I need to re-record it because I hate my voice. But for now, it's good for now. Okay.
Well, I have to do a quick like 5-minute tutorial for a client on something next week. So I'll give it a shot.
Great.
See if it works. My tech tip is a Mac thing again. And it's another system thing, which is very cool. Very often I need to send a client or send somebody a list of files that are in a folder, or I want to, you know, maybe these are the files to use, or like here are all the images. I might say, you know, here's a list of the 10 images, mm-hmm. you know, by name. If you go into a folder, a Mac folder, and copy all the or select all the images, copy, and then go into a Word program like Word or Outlook or PowerPoint into a text box and hit paste, it will take all the names and paste it as text. So it doesn't paste the files, doesn't paste images, it pastes the actual names of the text. And this even works with layers. So if, if you have like multiple folders and you expand them and you see all the sub items in there, you can select everything in there, copy it, paste it into an email, paste it into a PowerPoint slide, and it turns it into a text. It turns it into text, and I use it all the time. And I only discovered it about a month or two ago. So it's a pretty cool little feature. And I tried it on the PC. Can't do it.
Well, and now he's saying so there.
Yeah, there might be a way, but I haven't.
Okay.
That's my system.
I love that.
Hey, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a graphic design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out online, www.tlccreative.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services, and my presentation-specific blog, thepowerpointblog.com.
And this is Nolan Hames. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. If your organization is interested in training, either data visualization, presentation, or speech coaching, give us a call.
This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website at presentationwhiz.biz, my blog at pptwizblog, and the Presentation Guild website at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me. We'll see you next time.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.